Hello and welcome to this episode of the Star Wars Universe Podcast. Today we're continuing our coverage of Star Wars Rebels as we dive into Season 2, Episodes 1 and 2, The Siege of Lothal. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about some recent casting news for the TV show Ahsoka. We're going to talk about some upcoming stuff in general about Star Wars. All that and more after a commercial break we have no control over. Welcome back. My name is Matthew. I'm your host. I'm joined, as always, for Rebels discussions by Sarah and Riki Hayashi. How you folks doing today?
Doing good.
I'm ready for the new season.
Nice. I enjoy season one. Season two and three, I think, are some of my absolute favorites. And it just, these episodes kick it off like with such a bang. And it's just, we're diving so much into the issues that I love most. I don't know how to talk about these episodes without getting into the plot of them, so I'm going to kind of give the plot summary pretty quickly. On orders to hunt down the rebels, and especially the Jedi among them, Darth Vader begins an oppressive campaign against Lothal's populace in order to find the group. The Ghost crew starts working with the wider rebel cells, but are divided between joining the larger network and waging open war on the Empire, or staying out of a large-scale fight. The situation is even more complicated when Minister Maketh Tua, fearing punishment for failing to neutralize the Lothal rebels, tries to defect to them in order to escape Vader, offering to reveal the truth behind why the Emperor wants the planet. However, Vader uses this to advantage and orchestrates Tua's murder by shuttle explosion, framing the rebels for the act and turning Lothal's population against them. The Ghost crew tries to flee but are cornered by Vader, who injures Kanan and Sabine and nearly kills Ezra before they finally escape. After being smuggled off-world by Lando Calrissian to escape the Empire, the demoralized crew meets up with Ahsoka's rebel cell, but Vader pursues them and proceeds to wipe out most of the rebel ships, discovering Ahsoka's presence during a mental encounter with the Force. Ahsoka's mind is temporarily overwhelmed in the process. She later joins the Ghost crew as they vow to join the wider rebellion. And I will say it's not included here, but then at the very last scene is Vader having a, you know, long distance discussion with the Emperor, during which Vader says that the Anakin's apprentice still lives. And so they decide that she should be captured because she could lead them to more Jedi. And it's a scene that is very intentionally, I think, reminiscent of Vader telling the Emperor that Luke Skywalker lives. So yeah, a lot going on here. We're jumping into a lot of the big issues of the show. We're getting back some major characters with their original voices. James Earl Jones is doing Darth Vader. What'd you all think of these two episodes?
Yeah, like you said, season two starts off with a bang. Like, yeah, we're right into the action, and yeah, we get to see, Vader, Ahsoka, Lando, right? All sorts of familiar faces alongside our rebel crew.
This show is so good. We watched these two episodes and then we just kept watching. Yeah. Watched the next two again. And we'll go back and rewatch them for the next episode of this podcast. But that's just like it pulls you in. Have to keep watching, even though we know what's gonna happen. But it's still just the acting, the action, the plot, it's all very good.
You know, it's funny. I hope that people are watching the show for the first time, in part because we're podcasting about it and they want to follow along. And we have to go at a kind of, reduced pace because we do want to talk about every episode. They're all so good. But I'm having real trouble imagining people who are able to go like, okay, we're only going to watch two episodes a week because we want to wait for the Star Wars Universe podcast, folks. So if you're rushing ahead, don't worry. We're going to try and catch up. So, and my apologies that we did not have an episode last week. For Americans such as myself, it was Thanksgiving. I wound up cooking two turkeys. I found two different ways to cook them, both of which confirmed that it is just a flavorless bird that should not be eaten. But I've deeply offended Sarah here. Many people liked the turkey I cooked. I just didn't like it. But the point being, I'm sorry we couldn't have an episode last week. We are going to try and have episodes as often as we can and really help to keep you caught up. Riki and Sarah and I were just discussing this, and we think we have a way to, even when Book of Boba Fett comes out, we will keep having Rebels episodes coming out, because I certainly don't expect you to, put that on pause for 2 months. But either way, that's all a long digression to say, yeah, I agree. To me, these episodes are the heart and soul of why I love this show, because a lot of times prequel type stuff is, you sort of like, it's kind of connected to everything else, but it's so set apart and you're kind of wondering, like, how does this make any sense with the rest of the story we're telling? Here they're fitting it in so well. They're showing us, like, this is the beginning of that Rebel Alliance that Luke will join a couple of years later in the original New Hope movie. And we're seeing how Ahsoka and Vader are playing out. We're just seeing all of it.
Yeah.
And it's also the missing piece for fans of the original trilogy of getting this menacing Vader. I mean, Vader was menacing in the original trilogy movies, but the action sequences were not, you know, that thrilling from a swordsmanship standpoint. And here we get, you know, Darth Vader just absolutely going off against Kanan and Ezra, both with the lightsaber and the Force, and then in his TIE fighter. It's Vader at his best.
Yeah.
And it's very thrilling.
And I think, you know, understandably knowing that the voice actor they used in the prequels and in some other things was not, you know, understandable. But having it be James Earl Jones again is just so good, I think. The animation, the voice, it just really feels like Vader to me in a way that, like, I didn't necessarily get out of, Revenge of the Sith, or even though it was James Earl Jones' voice, the pun using of Rogue One, this just feels like so much more like Vader to me. Yeah. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just agreeing with you.
And similar to Rogue One, too, the scene where Vader reveals himself to the rebels, we get that, like, long shot of him, and then his red lightsaber ignites kind of in the dark. And very similar menace to it.
Very much so. Yeah, I mean, you get the feeling that by A New Hope, he's this sort of, like, you know, larger-than-life figure. Mm-hmm. And, like, getting to see how that all occurred, I think it's just so nice to get to have happen. So we'll definitely talk more about Vader, but let's kind of back up a bit and talk, first of all, about what the Ghost Crew is going through. Because, you know, at the end of the last season, as we talked about, they came into contact with this larger network of rebels. They had the chance now to kind of learn who Fulcrum was, to learn that Ahsoka's still out there, to join up with the rebellion as it is. It's not the full Rebel Alliance that it will become, but there's groups that are working together. And now it seems like they're not all sure. You know, some of them are Hera definitely is all aboard. Kanan especially doesn't want to be part of a military. He doesn't want to be part of a group. He just wants to kind of be a Robin Hood. You know, he wants to steal from the Empire and give to the poor. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about kind of seeing those two sides of this and the Ghost Crew being divided?
Yeah, I mean, I think it makes sense, given what we know about Hera and Kanan, that they would sort of be on opposite sides of this argument. I mean, Hera was always the contact point with Fulcrum. So having her being so willing to join up with Phoenix Squadron, and, like, this is the sort of the hope we were after, like, we got to fight this big fight. And Kanan's reluctance to join up with former Jedi and, like, engage in a military operation, especially since, like, I mean, he was a kid, but he was still sort of part of the Clone Wars. And that didn't end well for him, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, his reluctance also makes total sense.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen, I mean, in the Bad Batch, we've seen both of their backstories.
Right.
And when they were younger children. And so I think it does make sense, as Sarah said, that Kanan, as a Jedi, you know, his instinct is to hide himself and to be inconspicuous, because the more he reveals himself as a Jedi and to have these abilities, this is going to happen, right? Like, Darth Vader is going to show up, and that's bad news.
They just defeated that first Inquisitor, and it came so close to dying to him.
Mm-hmm.
I also think one of the things that I got out of this is, and this I feel like is so appropriate because I think it happens in so many of these stories and in real life, I feel like there's a difference in perspective of what their goals are. You know, Ahsoka and the rebels, they really believe they can overthrow the Empire. They can restore the Republic. My sense is that until now, that has never been Kanan's goal. Kanan is more seeing this as the Empire is a given, but I can at least, like, harass them a little bit and make things harder for them and make things easier for the people they're oppressing. And I just loved seeing that as, like, these two different perspectives, and that he's really wrestling with, like, to him, the idea of taking on the Empire at all is just unfathomable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Kanan's definitely just there to, like, stick it to the man. Whereas, mm-hmm. like, Hera, who's, I mean, she's been through these sort of political unrests ever since she was a kid, as we saw in Bad Batch, right? Like,
right.
It makes sense that she believes that the Empire could be overthrown. I also think that maybe Kanan's not super keen on bringing the Republic back, right? Because, like, the Republic, again, things didn't end great for him there.
Right. Well, for Kanan, I don't know that he sees a difference between the Republic and the Empire. Mm-hmm. It was like a continuation of sorts, whereas I think Hera does see that it was more of a usurping of one government into another.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think we forget sometimes that the Emperor has been like effective at, you know, telling this lie that the Jedi were rebelling, and so they had to be put down. And Kanan doesn't know what actually happened. And, you know, he may well think that, you know, the Emperor made this all up. He may think that, like, some idiot Jedi at the top tried something and got in trouble. You know, like, he's so uncertain about it that he's just is like, yeah, I want to just wash my hands of it. Whereas Hera, as we learn somewhat in Bad Batch and we'll learn in later episodes, you know, she's the daughter of a person who has been fighting and rebelling ever since the Clone Wars. So they come at it from very different perspectives.
Yeah, for sure. And then, like, we even see some of the other crew voting on, because, mm-hmm. yeah, they take it to a vote as to whether they should stay with Phoenix Squadron or go back, just be in by themselves. And, like, Zeb wanting to do the Robin Hood thing makes sense, especially what we know of him from the beginning, where he was kind of willing to sacrifice Ezra because he's just like, well, you're not really part of my crew yet. Right. I gotta look out for my own. And then Ezra kind of doing the full turnaround and being like, yeah, we should provide hope to the whole galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Well, those other crew members, I mean, Zeb, literally, you know, his race has been wiped out. But for a few survivors by the Empire, and Mandalore of Sabine, not wiped out, but definitely subjugated under the Empire.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And they're kind of their dignity taken away. So I think they all have good reasons to fight against the Empire and to want to do more than just harass and steal and make a living on the fringes.
Yeah. And I just love the way it plays out, because I think you're right. It makes total sense, you know, that for all of them, this is the first time they're considering being part of this great galactic battle between, like, what they see as good and what they see as evil. Kanan's been there, done that. Mm-hmm. He did that fight and lost.
Yeah.
And speaking of others who are now kind of having mixed feelings about the Empire, what do you think of Minister Tua? Because she's kind of been mostly a background character for this show so far. But here she's getting blamed for what happened to on Lothal, the fact that they haven't caught everyone yet. It's made very clear that Vader is kind of now, he's acting on behalf of Tarkin, but it's him himself as well, are very disappointed with Minister Tua. It seems pretty clear to her that, you know, she's going to be up against the wall and be blamed for all of this. And so she turns to the Rebels and wants to work with them.
Yeah, I had forgotten how little we see of Governor Price. Mm-hmm. In these early part of the show because of this, right? Like, Minister Tua has to take the fall. And then after this, we're probably going to get more of Governor Price as the political figure.
We ain't getting more of Governor Tua, that's for sure. Yeah. I think this is where my, like, goldfish memory really helps me enjoy watching things multiple times, because I, like, mm-hmm. genuinely forgotten what had happened with Minister Tua. And so when she approached them and was like, uh-oh, I'm afraid, please, like, I want to defect to you guys, help me, I'll give you this information. I was like, this is a trap that Vader has set up. She is part of this trap. It's a trappy trap.
Well, it was a trap.
I mean, it was a trap, yeah.
She wasn't a part of it.
Well, she except was. Except as bait. She was the bait, yeah. It was a trap set by Vader. And, mm-hmm. I mean, like, she ended up paying the ultimate price for it. But I think she genuinely did want to defect, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But such a Vader / Tarkin move, mm-hmm. right? To use her as bait and then just sacrifice her and pin the blame on the Rebels.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I just love how much it says about the situation that we're having here, you know, in that, first of all, just I think as you're saying, as we as viewers did this, the crew of the Ghost does not believe her at first either. And they really have to argue about, are they going to do this? And to me, that kind of is very telling of, like, one of the problems here is that because they know that Tarkin and Vader and all them can pull things like this, there may be others who very genuinely want to defect or want to work with the rebels and are not going to be welcomed with open arms. And the other part of it is that I love, it would have been very easy for her to be the character who said, I see the terrible things that the Empire is doing. I think they're wrong. I, for idealistic reasons, am going to join the rebellion because I love Lothal. That has nothing to do with it. She's just protecting her own skin, you know? And I've often talked about why I love Rogue One so much, in that it kind of gets away from the, like, everyone who's a rebel is pure and shiny and good and moral, and gets to, like, people join rebellions for all kinds of reasons, some of them noble, some of them not, and you just, you go with what you have. And I like that with Minish Tua. You know, she's not joining because it's her rebellion. She wants to protect Lothal. She just knows she's going to die if she doesn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, Minister Tua is in it for Minister Tua, right? Like, and I mean, you said, like, they're sort of blaming her for not finding the rebels on Lothal. Like, she has been fairly incompetent, like, regarding that. Which, I mean, like, is good for us and for our rebels and everything. But, I mean, Tarkin / Vader, I don't think, are wrong, necessarily, to be blaming her for this. In, like, a, I don't know. Like, obviously their actions are wrong. They are very evil people. But, like, I don't know. I mean, Tua wasn't doing her job. She wasn't getting it done. Yeah.
Yeah.
It does call into question what her job was.
Well, I think, like, in their eyes, right, it's like, you're our servant, basically. Your job is to do what we tell you to do.
Yeah.
Right? And we've told you to find these rebels and get rid of them. And you haven't. Like, you're not serving Lothal. You're not Lothal's minister. You're, like, our puppet.
My point is, like, arguably, Agent Kallus is more directly responsible.
Oh, sure.
For the failures to capture the rebels.
Yeah. But he's at least, like, gotten some skin on them.
Yeah, he's been competent in the pursuit, but he has failed the mission.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. No, I think it's all very true. And I, at some point, I really want to do a book club on the Thrawn books that are taking place simultaneously to this, because Tua is a character in those, and as is the, like, to some extent, Price is setting, not really setting her up as a fall guy, but there's some extent to which Price is like, things are getting weird on Lothal. I'm going to come up with a reason why I should be on Coruscant working with the Emperor. A, because Lothal's a backwater and Coruscant is, like, the cool, fun place to be. Mm-hmm. But also, I think that it's never quite explicitly said, but there's an element in the books, which are considered canon, that she's kind of putting Tua in a position where she thinks it's an impossible situation and the blame's going to fall on her.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
Yeah. But it you know, I watch these movies and TV shows where, you know, the bad guys just kill anybody who doesn't do exactly the right thing. And you sort of think, like, this has to be not be good for worker retention. You know, this is not how to build loyalty among a workforce.
Sure. But if it's like anybody who tries to quit gets blown up in a shuttle, I feel like that might help you keep your workers around.
Yeah, that's definitely true. That's definitely true. There's not a lot of other good options for them.
Right, yeah.
So let's talk about Vader. I think we started to get into it, but let's kind of really dive in now. What was it like for you getting to see him now be our kind of primary antagonist, at least for these two episodes?
It, for me personally, I've read a lot of comic books kind of this era where Vader does badass stuff. So it reminded me a lot of that, where he just beats up on some Jedi. They manage to knock a walker down onto him or towards him. Mm-hmm. And the rebels are like, all right, now's our chance to escape. And he just shrugs it off, right, with the Force. Yeah. And just tosses a walker aside. And they're like, oh, no. Yeah. And that's like, that happens a lot in these comic books where Vader is just impossible to defeat. And I love it. And we saw it in the video games too, right? In Fallen Order, where it's like, when Vader shows up, you don't win the fight; you just try to escape.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it to me, it's really helpful. A, it kind of like it makes even more significant, like, just how powerful Anakin was. And that, you know, that to me, I read this great analysis of the fight between Anakin and Obi-Wan. That was basically talking about, like, Anakin is the better fighter, but he defeats himself because of his pride, because of his arrogance. And that Vader is now, like, all the same skill as Anakin, but with, you know, a little more restraint. He's still the dark side, but it's now, like, he's more in control of things. Hmm. And he's not just lashing out and making dumb moves with the high ground and all.
Yeah, he's, like, channeling his hatred and his, like, fear and all that. Yeah.
Exactly. And even if you haven't read the comics, although I know those are also amazing, just the scene where, you know, he shows up in a single TIE fighter, you know, and the advanced TIE fighter that he flies, the same one he has at the end of A New Hope. And literally the fleet is like, where are the Star Destroyers? Like, they're getting ready to flee until they see it's just a TIE fighter. So, like, whatever, we're going to take on this TIE fighter.
Yeah.
And he just wrecks house. Oh, and yeah. It's just the animation of it's great. The tension of it's great. It's such a good scene. And it really sells to me just how, like, you know, OP Vader really is.
Oh, yeah.
That was my goldfish moments, because when the rebels escape, Vader's like, prepare my ship. And in my head, in that moment, I was like, you know, thinking his Star Destroyer. Right. And then the next thing we see is him in his advanced TIE, and I was like, oh, his ship.
Right. Yeah, prepare my ship personally. Yeah. I'm going to go take care of business.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's, like, a great moment that sort of sums up the, like, oh no, that is Darth Vader, is when, like, mm-hmm. they first, Ezra and Kanan first see him, and Ezra's like, is this another Inquisitor? Like, what's going on? And Kanan's like, nah, this is something much, much worse. Like,
yeah.
Because, I mean, he kind of has the look of an Inquisitor, right? Like, mm-hmm. but yeah. Oh, so much more.
Yeah.
Yeah, and him going in just with the one tie also reminded me of The Last Jedi. Right, yeah. When Ben Solo, Kylo Ren,
yeah,
just goes at the Rebel fleet in his, I guess, TIE fighter-esque thing.
Yeah. He's his grandfather's grandson, that's for sure.
Yeah, and he at least has a little help, because then when he can't take a shot to kill his mother, like the two people coming in behind him do, but you're right, it's very much, he's clearly just an amazing pilot.
Yeah, and I mean, there's some Star Destroyers not too far behind Vader, but yeah.
And to me, this also, it, and here's one of the things I love about a prequel, where it doesn't contradict anything that happens later, but it adds more context, because, you know, one of the things that happens in the original trilogy that you don't really think about much is, in A New Hope, Vader is very hands-on. You know, he's the first one through the breach when they board Leia's ship, and he's the one slaughtering rebel soldiers, and, you know, he's the one leading the TIE fighter attack to defend the Death Star. And then his ship gets knocked out by, you know, Han Solo and Luke Skywalker. And from that point on, he's now the general back on the main ship. You know, he's giving the orders, but he's not the one flying the TIE fighter. He's fighting Luke, but otherwise he's not the one, you know, leading the charge in the Hoth. He's the last one in. And it kind of makes sense, you know, that, like, you know, the Emperor might be like, or someone might be like, yeah, you know, you're not the king of TIE fighting anymore. Like, maybe it's time to come into the Admiral's chair or whatever. But also, like, it just adds so much to the frustration he's feeling, you know, in Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi, that, like, yeah, he used to be the guy who would be out there actually fighting against the Millennium Falcon, and now he's not. And it's why the incompetence of everyone around him is just driving him crazy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and even, like, I like that you say that, like, the Empire might be like, come sit with me, my boy, etc. Because, like, in that interaction with Vader and the Emperor that we see at the end, where, like, Vader banishes everybody from the room and, like, calls the Emperor and then, like, takes a knee to him, right? I feel like having anybody witness Vader take a knee to someone is, like, not something that's going to happen right now, right? Yeah. Where, like, later on, once we get to Empire, it's sort of well known that he's, like, supplicating to the Emperor, I guess. I don't know if that's the right word. But, like, yeah, here it just seems like there's no way Vader would kneel in front of somebody. So he has to, like, get them all out of the room so he can kneel to the Emperor. I don't know. I thought that was neat. And then just, like, Sheev. Such a mastermind. My old friend. You're good. You're great. Yeah.
Well, especially because, and I wish we knew more about this, but Bad Batch kind of confirmed that, like, they didn't tell people that Palpatine was a Sith Lord. You know, he was just a senator from Naboo who was trying to lead the Republic. He got attacked by the Jedi. Like, there's no indication that he's the one who fought off the Jedi. And it's, you know, that Darth Vader is the one who's thought of as this, like, inherent to ancient religion. And so I do kind of wonder, like, does everyone else know that the Emperor is also a Sith Lord and is directly in connection with Vader? Or do you think Vader is just, like, the only one out there right now?
Yeah.
I think logically, like, that's why he has them clear the room, because they're going to talk Jedi stuff.
Sure.
Right. Yeah.
Sith stuff, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, like, obviously Kanan knows about the Sith, right? Like, he identifies Vader as a Sith Lord instead of an Inquisitor. But yeah, like, I don't know. I think that's a good point. Like, I just assume that people didn't think that, like, Palpatine was the Sith Lord. But maybe they do, but probably not, right? At least not at this point. I think later it becomes more evident.
I mean, what happens at the end of Revenge of the Sith is that he claims that the Jedi attacked him and, like, they injured him, which they did, but then, like, he becomes this quote-unquote feeble man, right? In the eyes of the people.
Okay.
Right. He has the scars from the lightning, and the other thing is that, as we learn, like, the Sith haven't been heard of for 1,000 years. So, like, the Jedi remember, but, like, most people, they probably haven't even heard. They may well think that the Jedi are the only Force users out there.
Oh, so neat. So, Dooku as well never gets revealed? Sorry, my prequel knowledge is basically non-existent. But, yeah.
I don't know. Because I think, like, the Jedi figure out that Darth Tyrannus is Count Dooku, but I don't think that's ever made public.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, there's so much there that we just don't know.
Yeah, Jedi need better PR.
Yeah. And very much tied in then, I think, to the Vader story, and we'll get to how she connects to him. But also, let's just start with just her. What we got Ahsoka at the very end of season one, and I think it was possible to think that she would just be like she'd pop up for 5 minutes every season. Here, though, she's a pretty big character. How is it seeing Ahsoka on screen for this much and seeing her in this new role?
Yeah, Ahsoka's great. She, again, like we've always said, she's maybe one of the best things to come out of Clone Wars, aside from Hondo and Naka. But yeah, it was really nice seeing her in more than just like the Bane Organa kind of role. Like, we saw him pop up a couple times as sort of a, like, touchstone towards the original trilogy. But yeah, and then also her interactions with Anakin were so great, because, like, we hadn't, like, this is pre-final season of Clone Wars, so we hadn't really had any sort of closure at this point. But even then, like, getting to see, you know, her recognize that Vader is Anakin, and Anakin recognize that Ahsoka's alive, right? Or Vader recognize that Anakin's apprentice is alive. It was just, like, that moment was kind of heartbreaking, but so powerful. Yeah.
To borrow a phrase from a different podcast, I got full body chills when Vader says the apprentice lives.
Yeah.
Because the implications of him realizing that and knowing that are monumental for this series and for both characters.
Yeah. And just, like, the way he says it, too, right? Like, the James Earl Jones gravitas of that line. And speaking of Anakin in the third person as well, like, to the Empire, kind of to himself even, right? Like, he's fully detached from Anakin Skywalker.
I think I've mentioned that in the Thrawn books, there's one that's told in part from where Thrawn and Vader are together. It's told in part from his perspective. And, you know, Vader talks about the Jedi, and there's a real, like, he doesn't want to even acknowledge to himself that used to be him. It's like this, it's this other person who came before him.
Yeah.
I think that is so well, it's so well connected. And to me also, I don't remember the order. I think this came out before, actually I'm fairly certain this show came out before they released that seventh season of the Clone Wars. But seeing this, to me, it just brings back that wonderful scene where Vader, you know, at the very end, finds Ahsoka's lightsabers, and he thinks that she is dead.
Yeah.
And has whatever feelings he has about that. Did it also feel to you like it was very intentionally mirroring Luke and Vader? Like, kind of connecting with, like, the flashing of the mental connection outside of Bespin City?
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and even just, like, the way that, like, they're talking about, like, the apprentice of Anakin Skywalker, right? Like, the son of Anakin Skywalker, like, is mirrored mm-hmm. in that language, right?
Yeah. And so at the end there, Kanan, like, Ahsoka asks Kanan about Vader because I think she's starting to suspect who it is. And Kanan, of course, has no idea. He doesn't know any of this. But then she asks, he asks her, do you know? And you see it just like focus on her face for a while. And she just says, no. Is she not willing to admit it to herself? Does she know, but she doesn't want to admit it to him? Because all the questions going to ask about her. What do you think is happening there?
Oh, okay. So I think this is a sneaky, like, I don't know Darth Vader. I knew Anakin Skywalker, right? Another, like, separation of this sort of, like, duality of this person, right? Like, this is not the person I know anymore. This is something new, something that I don't understand. Like, it was Anakin, and she's not, like, giving that information to Kanan. I think she knows that it was Anakin. That he was Anakin. Is, maybe, still.
Mm.
But, yeah. I think her, like, no, I don't know who this person is, like... Yeah, the big, I don't recognize you anymore. You're not my master.
Yeah.
I think it's a bit more complicated. Mm-hmm. I think she felt what she recognizes that what she felt like Anakin. But she doesn't know how to process that yet because to her, she thought that Anakin had died in the Clone Wars. So she... like literally is questioning her own feelings at this point and probably needs to go do some meditation
to search her feelings
and or research
because she knows them to be true.
Yeah.
Because how if you thought your friend had died and then all of a sudden you feel, you know, I don't know how it feels to use the Force, but if you feel that in the Force, he's alive and that he's this terrifying villain. Like, how do you just, like, oh, yeah, I know who it is. You can't.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think that's, like, I'm saying something similar, right? Where it's, like, this is a changed being now, and I don't know who it is.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of, I think you're both making really good points, but I think I'm kind of with Riki and that Sarah. I think, I don't think she's quite as certain of that. Like, I think it's not, because I think you're right. Everything she knew was that he was dead, but also, like, I think she's not ready to accept that he could turn, you know, because she so looked up to him. She so thought he was her mentor and things like this, and that he was so good in so many ways. As well as, and again, I'm trying not to bring in too much from the novels and stuff like that, but this one at least is canon. In the Ahsoka novel, One of the things that she's going through in that book is she's coming to terms with the idea that Anakin becomes Vader, and she feels a lot of guilt about that. There's a real sense, like, she feels like she was kind of like this balance. She helped keep him, you know, in balance somewhat, and that she has all this guilt of, if I hadn't left him, would he have not changed? And so I feel like, and I don't remember exactly where that comes in the chronology. I think they're about the same time, I think that's earlier. So I'm trying to look it up now. But yeah, I think to me it really plays as, like, she starts to think it's true, but she just, some part of her can't admit it to Kanan, in part because, like, it's not Anakin, but also because to admit it to him would be to admit it to herself, and I just don't think she's ready to do that yet.
That's fair. Yeah. I don't know. I just felt like similar vibes of, like, Darth Vader killed your father, says Obi-Wan, right? Like, these are two different people. But yeah, I get what you're saying, in that, like, this would, I think, be hard to swallow, right? For sure.
Yeah, I don't think she has any reason to conceal that from Kanan and Ezra in the same way that Obi-Wan concealed it from Luke.
I mean, I think you do. It's like, that person used to be my Jedi master. Hey, Kanan, guy who's already kind of down about the Jedi, right? Mm-hmm. I feel like that wouldn't go over well. So there's maybe a reason to not
Yeah.
be that's super also forthcoming true. About it.
Especially because, I mean, she didn't leave the Jedi under the best circumstances, mm-hmm. you know? And she has no idea what others, if you know, what others think or what the records are, things like that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, we do get that last scene with Vader and the Emperor. And to me, I thought that was, again, interesting because, you know, obviously much later, we get Vader telling the Emperor about Luke. And at first, the Emperor is just like, we'll kill him. And it's Vader who's like, well, but maybe he can be turned, you know, maybe all of this. We don't get that as much here, but I am wondering, do you think Vader is already thinking that he could recruit Ahsoka himself? You know, because it's all in this rule of two thing, you know, that like mm-hmm. Vader eventually might have find himself an apprentice and together they would overthrow the Emperor. And we know that he has, like, on some levels, all this anger. Like, part of him feels like the Emperor trapped him and deceived him and stuff. Is he already on some level maybe thinking that, like, maybe him and Ahsoka could take out the Emperor? Or is that just not even where he is yet?
No, absolutely. Rule of 2.5 is always in play.
Yeah, well, I don't, like, well, then why does he also mention Kenobi right afterwards? I think this is the, like, clean up the past, get rid of the last vestiges of Anakin Skywalker.
Right.
Yeah. I think in his mind, he does think he could possibly turn Ahsoka. But also, like, if she knows where Kenobi is, like, sweet, sweet revenge for burning him on Mustafar.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's that whole, like, you know, you can never truly be strong until you've killed off everyone who ever saw you as weak. You know, I mean, it's a ridiculous idea, but it kind of ties in, Sarah, what you were saying. Like, he doesn't want people to see him kneel. Like, Kenobi and Ahsoka saw mm-hmm. his weakness, you know? And so they have to either be turned or destroyed.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
So I think that's about all I had for these episodes. A couple of, like, little other things I wanted to bring up. But is there any other kind of things for you two that, like, either big or little that you wanted to dive into or mention?
I have a few things. So one, I guess, is a little thing. Apparently there are two versions of that Vader Emperor scene. One recorded with Sam Witwer, who's mm-hmm. kind of a regular on Clone Wars and on Rebels. And then the other, which I think is the one that is on Disney Plus now with it Ian is, McDermott.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Ian McDermott being the actor who played the Emperor in the movies.
Live action.
Yeah. And it's kind of cool because they did that once they cast Ian McDermott as part of Rise of Skywalker, the ninth movie. Because they wanted to kind of like reestablish for people like that this is the mm-hmm. voice.
But yeah, you can go on YouTube and find videos of that have both versions. And it's very cool to listen to the different takes on Emperor Palpatine and the spots where there's just like a little bit more gravel in the voice sometimes. Mm-hmm. So that's a fun, like, small thing.
I was low key bummed it wasn't Tim Curry, but what can you do?
Tim Curry who took over the role, in season, what, 6?
Ish, and yeah. 7 it's a little bit mixed, but yeah.
The other thing, which is a little bigger, but I want to talk about is the, captain. Is it captain or admiral? Jun Sato of Phoenix Squadron.
I think he's an admiral.
He's leading this rebel cell that the Spectres join up with. And it's just, for me, it's cool to see a person who is Asian, Japanese coded, you know, as mm-hmm. the name, in this command position. Voiced by Keanu Young, who is Hawaiian with Japanese and Chinese heritage. Mm. And apparently the name Jun Sato is a combination of two people who were involved in the Godzilla franchise in Japan.
Oh, that's awesome.
I guess Dave Filoni is a fan of kaiju movies, and he took those names and combined them to be Jun Sato. So we'll be seeing more of this character, and we'll talk more about him, I think, and his command in the future. Yeah. But I just wanted to kick off with that.
Yeah, he's been a fun character, and that's certainly where I thought they were going, but I didn't know the details, especially not about his name. So I love that we're getting more of him. And yeah, because we talked a lot, especially during Clone Wars, that often when they would code characters as supposed to be kind of like representing different, you know, ethnic or nationality groups, you know, here on Earth, it was often done very clumsily and you know, with a good deal of racism often, you know, especially in terms of like the accents or being exaggerated or like the way that connected to things that really wouldn't make sense. The Trade Federation, obviously, the Trade Federation and the Gungans being the most obvious examples. Mm-hmm. But there was a bunch in the Clone Wars TV shows that we point out as well. And yeah, I like that for Sato, it isn't like it's not connected to him being an alien. It's not connected to anything about a culture. It's just a like, yeah, you know, like. Lots of people on, you know, of the humans come from all sorts of different parts of human culture yeah. in this large galaxy. And so
space
of course
Asians exist. Space yeah. Asian humans exist.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So definitely a cool thing. I also just like that Lando Calrissian gets to have a little bit of a comeback here.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and again, we're just seeing him as, to me, he's very much in the, like, no spoilers, but I will say I don't honestly remember if him and Hondo and Naka ever meet, but I really hope that they do either in this or in some other property, because to me, they're very similar in a lot mm-hmm. of ways. Like, they're not the same character. They have their own differences. You know, Lando is much more of a like swashbuckler, whereas Hondo is much more of a like, you know, I'm just kind of, you know, doing my thing. But like, I mean, even the similarity of their names, I don't think is coincidental, yeah. Lando and Hondo.
Yeah, well, I think like Lando's more like suave and like wants to bone anything that moves, right? Right. Whereas Hondo's like, welcome, my friends. I might stab you in the back, but we're gonna have a good time. Let's drink.
Hondo's your uncle. You yeah, know, he's not the seducer, but yeah,
Lando could be your uncle.
Ugh.
No, but I do think it's nice that the character just shows up. For, you know, a minute or two.
With his weird southern droid.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. but yeah, that it means we get more of this character, and it wasn't just like a one-shot guest appearance. Like, mm-hmm. He is woven into the fabric of this show.
And I like, sort of as like a theme overall, how Rebels is introducing characters like Lando, like Ahsoka, like that we know already. As these sort of touchstones, like you're saying, weaving them into the fabric, right? It's not like they're going to take over. They have some plot moments, right? Like Ahsoka's moments through this story arc were like very powerful. But I mean, I see this branching off as like the Ahsoka show, right? Like it's still right. very much about our rebels, but it's kind of grounded in this like larger Star Wars mythos, which is really nice to give us those like touch points.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, and we'll be getting more of that next week.
Oh, yeah. We watched ahead.
Speaking of watching ahead.
To me, it just makes the universe feel more lived in. You know, for sure. It doesn't, like, there's some moments in the prequel movies, especially, like, just the whole existence of R2 and C-3PO, but just with other characters as well, where it's like, it just feels like they're trying to be like, you know, it's like the amusement park ride. Oh, look, and that's, here's this mm-hmm. character. Lando just feels like he's in it. Like you said, it's a natural part of the world.
Yeah, it has to make sense.
Yeah,
with
yeah.
R2 and 3PO, especially the way 3PO is first introduced as being made by Anakin on Tatooine, yeah. it's yeah. like, why is he here other than yeah. to like have this weird origin story?
Yeah.
Whereas Lando being on Lothal to make a buck mining, that's Lando. That just makes mm-hmm. sense.
Yeah, like to me, the other thing I think of in terms of like the way where it goes wrong is that like. You can't just have there be new Wookiee characters who are working with Yoda on, you know, Kashyyyk. It yeah. has to be Chewbacca, who somehow goes from being, like, one of the military leaders on Kashyyyk to a smuggler who gets rescued by Han Solo.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
With Lando, it doesn't feel like that.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So somehow forgets. yeah. Forgets about Jedi and the Force.
Yeah. I think that's a good place to wrap up and then go into the spoiler section where we're going to discuss some casting news. So I think now's a good time. We're going to probably move into the spoiler section where we're going to talk about some casting news and things like that. And it's about the Ahsoka show, but it's obviously very relevant to the characters in this and sort of where they wind up. So if you haven't seen the rest of the show and you've been able to avoid that news, good on you. I've been avoiding spoilers left and right. I'm going to... I managed to go into the Eternals and Hawkeye without having seen a single trailer for anything.
Ooh.
So, yay for people avoiding spoilers. But if you're taking off now, as always, thank you so much. You can find how to contact me and Enrique and Sarah if you want to talk to us more on theethicalpanda.com. That has all the contact information. Let us know what you think. We love to hear your feedback. We love to hear your thoughts. It's a great way to kind of join the conversation and keep it going. And so to all of you, thank you so much. And now we're going to go into a spoiler section in 3, 2, 1. Sabine Wren is back and will be in the Ahsoka TV show.
Yay. Sabine.
Oh, boy. Okay.
She's great.
Yeah, let's talk and about again, the casting.
Goldfish brain. I entirely forget what happens to her at the end of Rebels.
Well, spoilers. We'll talk about that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Sabine is going to be played by Natasha Liu Bordizzo, who is an Australian actress of Chinese descent. Mm-hmm. And she is on a Netflix show called Society, which I know nothing about. But she was also on an adaptation TV show of Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, the martial arts movie from like 25 years ago, I guess.
No, I know I'm old.
So I think that makes a little bit of sense that they cast her, presumably she has some martial arts background and some stunt work background, so she'll be able to do some of these acrobatic some of them on her own, right? Without a stunt double. But there is, I don't want to say controversy, but, and for me personally too, like I guess I'm a little upset that the voice actress from Rebels, Tia Sirkar, didn't get this role. And there's some, you know, like, why not have the voice carry over to it? But there's also the racial aspect of it, where Tia is Indian. And then, like I said, Natasha is Chinese. So there's been some questions of, well, what race is Sabine, right? Like Mandalorian. Right. But as we were talking about with Sato, like, he is clearly space Japanese, like, based on his name and accent. So there's been some question of, well, like, what human equivalent, Earth equivalent race is Sabine? And given that she was played by an Indian actress, and I guess, you know, spoilers, her parents on this show, her relatives were played by Indian actors and actresses. That seems to establish something. And so legitimately, there are some questions of like, well, why have, you know, this Chinese Australian person? And that goes to also like just the topic of, you know, not necessarily whitewashing in this case, but I guess like Asian washing that that a lot of Southern Asian people get upset when Asian just means Eastern Asian, you know, Japanese, Korean, Chinese. Right. And so this adds to that conversation.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting. And for me, I've been reading about this. Until then, I will admit I had no idea about the background of the actors. And when I first saw who was playing her, and that she was more Australian, but with kind of East Asian heritage, without knowing that about the voice actors, to me, that actually made a lot of sense. Because the way Sabine is played, to me, she comes off like an anime teenager. You know, not necessarily like that she's an anime character, but that she's like the stereotype of the kind of anime fan look, particularly in her art style and things like that. And so I just, even though I don't think there's anything about the way the character looks that reads East Asian, I had thought of her in those terms because of just her hairstyle, her demeanor, and things like that. But yeah, then realizing that what was happening with the actors, it's such a multi-layered conversation, you know. And I really appreciate the way you framed it, because I feel like, for me, especially as a white person, it's one where I think like my voice is not going to be as relevant anyway, but like I want to just keep reading what more people have to say about it, you know, because I feel like I can understand a lot of different perspectives on this and understand that we're diving into a lot of layers of complexity that just haven't been talked about before. And it's really good that they're getting talked about.
Yeah. And I think it opens the door for a lot of discussion about other, you know, voice actors and actresses who are currently doing animated, you know, Star Wars stuff, and like questions of what happens when it becomes live action. Because we didn't really get any, I didn't see any discussion or questions about the casting of Rosario Dawson, right? For Ahsoka. I mean, there were questions, but not in terms of like, why not Ashley Eckstein, right. the voice actress for Ahsoka on these animated shows.
And then, oh gosh, Starbuck is not her for realsies name. That's the character she played.
Oh,
in
Katie Sackhoff.
Katie Sackhoff, thank you. Yeah, playing the Mandalorian girl. This is really bad.
Bo-Katan,
thanks. Yeah. Goldfish.
And that was one where the way the character was drawn in the cartoons maybe seemed to have been inspired by the actress herself.
Yeah.
So there was more clear continuity of look.
I don't know. I guess. I didn't love her casting because she didn't feel like she felt like the appropriate age in any way, shape, or form. But I mean, then I guess like there's lots of weird, like, why is Obi-Wan Kenobi aging so rapidly on Tatooine sort of situations going on in the Star Wars universe. So,
But nowadays, like in video games, especially the way that the character is portrayed in the video game is just like, it looks like the voice actor a lot of the time.
Yeah.
So I hope that maybe like Star Wars starts doing that more often so that if they want to portray them in some live action setting, they can just have the continuity of the same voice.
Yeah.
Right. No, I think that makes a lot of sense. Although there's a couple things I want to say there. One is not to reopen old conversations, but I do think it's interesting that here we're so focused on, like, it would be better if we just went with a voice actor, where a big part of my, like, don't use Hayden Christensen argument is give Matt Lanter the part, you know, the voice actor from Clone Wars, who I think did, just in terms of pure screen time, played Anakin for a lot longer than Hayden. So I just want to poke y'all a little bit about that one. But granted, there was a live action actor before. But more seriously, I don't know anything about these professions, and so I think it's but I want to just point out, I really love the idea of trying more and more to give voice actors the live action roles. I know I read one piece by someone who'd been a voice actor on I'm gonna see if I can Google it and find the article and share it again, but basically they were talking about, like, he was saying, look, I'm a voice actor, I'm really good at standing in front of a microphone. I haven't physically acted with my body since grade school. And it's kind of saying, like, you know, some voice actors can also be live action actors, but not all of us. And sure. No, some of us wouldn't want to be. And so I do think that I do sometimes wonder if there have been cases where people, like, maybe their first thought is to go to the voice actor. And then it's like, okay, you're a great voice, but just on stage, this just on screen, this just doesn't look the part. But yeah, it's to me, it's. I like that we're doing it more, but I wish we were doing a lot more often. And I love what you're saying about the look of it.
Yeah,
I just want to point out that I am not team voice actors B, and I was against Katie Sackhoff. Not that I've got anything.
Okay, that's fair.
But like, yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, especially with the whole like Katie Sackhoff was a live action actor whom they put in the role of Bo-Katan because it's like sci-fi stuff, right?
Right.
So she's familiar with live action acting, whereas, like you were saying, most voice—I don't know—I don't know how voice acting works. Clearly, like Tim Curry is doing voice acting as well, and like Mark Hamill, there's some crossover. But yeah, just because you're a good voice actor does not necessarily mean you were a good live action actor, or you have any desire to be a live action actor.
Sure, I will point out that in this case, Tia Sirkar, it has done live action. She was on The Good Place. She's in Supergirl.
Oh. Yeah.
I know who she is now. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, cool. She was Vicky.
Yes, I believe, Vicky. Yeah.
On The Good Place.
The demon, yeah.
So I do acknowledge that there could be more of an action burden, as I said, for this show, right? And that maybe they wanted someone with more of an action background, which Natasha does have.
But yeah, I mean, I get the like impetus of like, why not just stick with an Indian actress then? Because like, clearly Indian actresses who can do stunts exist. Right.
And to me, if we're going to talk about kind of like the way racial line crossing happens in good or bad ways in terms of voice actor to the way it's presented, I think it's also worth mentioning. I think we mentioned this before, but bring it up again. Agent Callis, who is presented as white, played by David Oyelowo. How's it pronounced?
Oyelowo.
Oyelowo. Who is black? And in that case, my understanding is that. Because this I looked into, they had like been drawing the character for some time. Like with a lot of Rebels, they started doing all the like initial artistry and drawing things and storyboarding stuff out and animating some stuff before they started trying to cast actors. And this was a case where they were like, well, yeah, anyone of any race, we already know what the character's going to look like, but any voice can fit. Mm-hmm. And I think that that could also get into conversations of like, well, then once he was cast, should they have changed the character? Or is that actually a like, yeah, let's get away from the idea of like, if they're white on, if the white animation, does it have to be a white actor, voice actor, you know? And obviously this is when it's South Asian versus East Asian, very, very different. But it just, it, to me, it's one more interesting thing. It's an interesting part of the conversation to remember that this issue already is happening in Rebels to some extent.
Yeah. And like, I think we talked about that. I don't know if it was on the podcast, but Riki and I had about like how, you know, the voice actor for Agent Kallus probably will not be playing Agent Kallus in any sort of live action adaptation.
Which is unfortunate.
Yeah.
Right.
But also, like, I don't know. I also really get the, like, coding all of the Empire as the, like, white, blonde, blue-eyed, like, mm-hmm. Aryan race sort of thing to, like, hammer home that sort of, hey, they're the Nazis.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I'm trying to think, do we have any non-white Imperials who play major... I mean, we do in Mandalorian. With mm-hmm. Moff Gideon,
Giancarlo Esposito, is that who it is?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. But I don't think we have any. I think all of the Imperial figures we see are white, like the admirals and generals mm-hmm. and stuff like that.
It's not until the post-quel First Order that you start to see. I think there was an Asian person on the bridge of the dreadnought, and also women in the First Order, yeah. Right?
Right. Just to kind of also pull the conversation around all the way, did you all pick, before you knew about who the actress was, or maybe that you just looked it up immediately, but I'm wondering, did Sabine Wren ever read to you as somewhat East Asian coded, or is that just something I'm picking up?
I thought sort of South Asian-ish, just because she's got, like, her skin tone. I'm not super familiar with anime, so, I don't think I picked up on like the anime tones that you're mm-hmm. talking about, Matthew, but like that's probably just because I don't like, I know Sailor Moon and that's kind of like full stop my anime knowledge.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah, I don't know. I guess I also never really thought about it extraordinarily hard. Which
So for me, skin tone in an animated cartoon, right? Like how do you compare stuff?
Yeah.
Like The Simpsons, right?
Sure.
But she, to me, she always seemed a little darker skin tone than East Asian. And I probably would have said Southeast, like, you know, like Vietnamese or something like that.
Mm, that's fair.
Yeah, not necessarily Indian. That's kind of, yeah. But I mean, it's so hard to like think back to like, what I actually thought before I knew stuff. I don't know. Does that make sense?
No, yeah, no, totally. I think it's hard to remember that stuff. And I think for me, I mean, it was probably, I was not much of an anime person or a video game person. And I had just been, you know, watching my partner play a number of Final Fantasy video games. And I think I saw Sabine and her first comment was like, oh, that's Final Fantasy hair she has, you know. So that's probably also like, where I was coming from with that.
Sure. That makes total sense. Yeah.
And it's, I think this is going to be a wider conversation we're going to see more of. You know, on my Superhero Ethics podcast, we just did one episode, another one that'll be coming out soon, about the live action of Cowboy Bebop, where it was another instance of this happening, and where, the character of Jet is animated as a lot more light-skinned than it's a black actor who plays him in the show, live action. And I know that's caused a lot of upsetness from various circles. Mm-hmm. Also, there's people who are upset about, like, Faze having an actual gravity working outfit, and that's a whole other thing entirely. I quite liked the live action of Cowboy Bebop. I know a lot of people did not, but
I am sadly it's unfamiliar with Cowboy Bebop, but I've heard it's something that I should watch.
Huh. Yeah, fair. But yeah, I think it's going to be. I'm glad we're talking about it because I think, particularly if Cowboy Bebop is successful, I think we're going to see a lot more animated things coming to live action, not just in Star Wars. And I think that these questions are going to be coming up a lot more of. How much do you honor the voice actor? How much do you honor the look of the voice actor and things like that?
Mm-hmm.
So do we want to talk about plot-wise, like where Sabine Wren will be.
Yeah, we haven't actually gotten into the spoiler in the future. Part, but...
So can I like goldfish brain what I remember?
Yeah.
Okay. She like goes to Mandalore and meets her family and gets the weird dark saber, and then she takes it to a temple, and there's something about a temple with like the past and present Jedi folk who you hate so much, Riki. And then is she like queen of Mandalore? Do they have a queen? That's what I remember. That's my like vague recollection of I definitely watched this show once.
She does get the Darksaber, mm-hmm. and she does help liberate Mandalore.
Okay.
But then she gives up. Well, we established that you're not supposed to give up the Darksaber. But somehow the Darksaber goes to Bo-Katan. And Bo-Katan becomes the ruler of Mandalore.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Right.
And then at the end of the series, when Ezra disappears with Thrawn and the space whales.
Yes!
She then goes on a mission to try to find him.
Okay.
Yeah. With Ahsoka, right?
Yeah. And to me, that's... there's two things I think about this. One is it tells me that, you know, the last season of Mandalorian ended with the Mandalorian and Bo-Katan like having a lot of tension about who has the Darksaber and why. Mm. And so for I think there's no way you bring Sabine back without her playing some kind of a role in that story unfolding. But the other thing is I think there's been a lot of curiosity and wonder, like a lot of talk about Thrawn. I think it is official that Thrawn is coming back, but it's been so like unsure. And to me, if Sabine especially is being cast in the show, what that tells me is that like some people have been like, oh, okay, so Ahsoka is basically going to be Rebels season 5. And I'm really here for that. I'm here to like, if we're going to get some flashbacks of Sabine and Ahsoka, like what have they been doing for the last 20 years? You know, if it's going to be like, does this mean we're getting Ezra back? Does it mean we're getting, you know, Thrawn? Like all this stuff.
Honestly, like when we had the like Luke Skywalker moment in Mandalorian, I thought it was going to be like Ezra coming back and that was going to be it. But then it's like, clearly not. Nobody would not know this. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, I like speaking of the like Ahsoka moments we get here, I love the Ahsoka moments we get later with her and Anakin / Vader as Rebels progresses. Oh, and yeah, like totally agree, Matthew. I am here for Rebels season 6. Is that what it's going to be?
Season 5.
5?
There are 4 seasons of Rebels.
There's only 4 seasons of Rebels? That's so sad.
Yeah.
So I disagree, Matthew, that Sabine will be involved in the politicking of the Mandalorian stuff. Mm. Because I think being... she was cast for Ahsoka, and what we saw of her was she was looking for Thrawn, you know, presumably because finding Thrawn means finding Ezra, but also just if Thrawn is around, he's trouble, so you got to stop him. So I think it will probably be some kind of team up of Ahsoka and Sabine versus Thrawn trying to find Ezra.
I think that's probably the case. But the sense that I get, and I think I've read a couple things that confirm this, is that kind of what they're going for is something kind of equivalent to what DC did, what the CW Arrowverse, where you have a number of different shows that mostly have their own... not as much the high school drama and everybody has to wear $500 gowns and 80-inch high heels. Because I love those shows, but the first 2 seasons, like, that's all woman character is ever allowed to wear.
Yeah.
But just in that, like, all those stories are clearly happening in a connected universe, and every now and then, like, when there's a big deal, someone from one universe would come over to one show would come over to the other, or like the Netflix MCU did that to some extent. Yeah, I don't think it's going to be a major plot point, but I think Sabine will show up in an episode of Mandalorian, or Bo-Katan will show up in an episode of this. Like, there'll be some way in which their paths overlap for a little bit.
Cool.
And speaking of voice actors transitioning into live action.
Mads Mikkelsen?
Well, Lars.
Oh, his brother. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah.
Lars Mikkelsen, who portrays Thrawn on this show later on. Absolutely has to come back. Come on.
Yeah.
Just paint him blue, give him the right contacts, done.
We know that he's a great physical actor. We've seen him on screen many times. My guess is the only way he doesn't come back is if the actor doesn't want to.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
And like I mean, I haven't had this chance, but like my understanding is like sitting in a makeup chair for 3 hours being painted blue every day is not workplace conditions a lot of people are excited to sign up for.
That's
like,
fair.
To which case it'd be like, fine that he's not blue. I don't care. Just get him back. Yeah. Like, he's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that would be that. Okay. I would revoke my voice actors as characters.
Is that
for
easy?
That. Yeah. Well, I mean, he's also like, I don't know. Like, he's done the like stoic villain thing to a T before and just like bringing it over here. Yeah. Even though like that season of Sherlock was rough. But yeah, Thrawn's great. I love that we get to see more of Thrawn later.
So Sarah, how would you feel if they brought back the character of Kanan Jarrus, portrayed by Freddie Prinze Jr.?
Yeah, fine. I don't know. I guess. I don't know. See, Freddie Prinze Jr., I don't know. Fine, I guess is how I would feel. I'm fine, but like, fine.
All right. You heard it, Dave Filoni. Make it happen.
Yeah, we'll see. We will definitely see.
I trust in the Filoni. Yeah. The Filoni is with me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think that's about all I had for the Sabine news. Obviously, Book of Boba Fett is coming up soon. We're going to be excited about that. We'll definitely be covering it on this show. I think we're going to find a way to do both coverage of that and of Rebels. I want to do the Thrawn Book Club coming up soon because that obviously is those books are going to be so relevant to so much what we're going on. Maybe if I send you two a copy of the books for Christmas, I can twist your arm into reading them.
Twist our rubber arms, yeah.
Yeah.
Just go to the library.
Yeah, they're very good books that will somewhat break your brain.
Okay.
Because most of the protagonists are decent people who are in the Imperial Navy.
Oh, dear.
And like...
That's such a Timothy Zahn thing. It is. Starting from Thrawn himself. Right? Was portrayed as the anti-Vader. Like, I'm not just going to kill people. Like, I value my subordinates type thing. And it's like, oh, this is a change.
But, okay.
But he does kill someone in the Heir to the Empire novels. But yeah, even in this, he's more... He has a clear goal as to why he thinks the Empire needs to be strong.
But then especially Captain Pelion was, like, the most honorable Imperial. And ends up becoming, like, the... Galactic president or something after reunification or something
in the Legends canon. Yeah, I think that's true. I don't know the details.
So Zahn loves this, which I enjoyed their characters and their portrayal, but these days I am less into like make honorable Imperials because you just need them to be the bad folks.
Are we the baddies? Yeah.
We just want some clear-cut good and evil.
Yeah.
I can see that. That's fair. Yeah, and this, it's not as much being honorable as much as being like, it's the story of people who are in an institution that they believe in as the leadership of that institution turns worse and worse and worse. And like, yeah, it's done in a way where it's not like these are like pure heroes. Like I think you're supposed to be judgmental of them that they're not. Their eyes aren't more open to what the terrible things that are happening.
They're just kind of going down with the ship sort of situation.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's just like they're more relatable than just like, you know, slaughter them all with their helmets on.
Yeah.
But yeah. All the more reason why I want you all to read the books. I'd love to get your perspective on it. But we'll see where that goes with the new season. So any other last thoughts on Sabine or any of the rest of it?
I mean, so many more, but we have to stop talking.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Well, thank you, everybody. As I said, you can find all the stuff that I do at The Ethical Panda at theethicalpanda.com. Email me, theethicalpanda@gmail.com. Look for The Ethical Panda on all the other sites. That's a good way to find us. I'm also now starting to do, I'm one of the producers and guest hosts for coverage of the TV show Hawkeye. Speaking of the CW Arrowverse, as it's now appearing on the MCU, I am totally in love with this show. It is the closest thing I've seen the MCU do to a Netflix show, to the Netflix MCU since those shows. So I highly recommend it. Check that out on the MCU cast. Sarah and Riki, where can people find what you're doing?
Well, this is all post-spoiler talk. Everyone's already left.
But
if you want to find me, you can find me on Twitter at RickipediaGo.
If you want to find my very empty Etsy shop, It's Etsy.com/Hayashi Ceramics. I keep saying there might be more things there for Christmas, and then life keeps happening, but I don't know. Maybe.
I didn't say what year Christmas.
Yes. Christmas 2025.
I was going to keep hawking your stuff as the, like, hey, you're having supply chain problems. Here, that's not going to happen. But, yeah, if, you know.
Yeah, I'm selling in some, like, IRL Christmas markets, and once those are done.
Okay.
Then Etsy gets my oh, I have to deal with the post office.
Sounds good. Yeah. Sounds good. Well, as always, thank you both so much. This was a lot of fun. To our fans, thank you so much, and have a great day.